Great Britain and Japan, two nations once defined by order and cultural continuity, are now unraveling under the same globalist forces of mass demographic change.
It's emergency.
Yeah, we've just been attacked by someone racially.
In Britain, years of anti-racism indoctrination have crippled policing, producing a two-tier justice system.
Your officers assisted in that man's death.
That protects minority feelings over public safety.
In fact, Henry told officers that he could not breathe 9 times. He told them he had been stabbed 4 times. The response from one officer was, "I don't think you have, mate."
He was actually treated in a way that meant an accusation of a racial slur was treated more seriously than an act of murder. What does he say? "I can't breathe." Familiar words? Remember career criminal George Floyd, who died in appalling circumstances in Midwest America a few years ago. Remember the reaction to that and the way the police behaved. Within a few days, Keir Starmer was taking the knee. Black Lives Matter exploded all over the country. Churchill's statue was defaced. The cenotaph was vandalised. And yet, what has the public reaction been from our leaders and politicians? And indeed, to be frank, much of the media to this. Silence. Absolute silence. Proof, if ever there was any, that we're living in a two-tier culture in this country where the rights and privileges of white people matter less than those of ethnic minorities.
When we have police cars with pride flags on it, which is a politicised movement, we know that the police, who are supposed to be impartial, are often anything but. They are driven by an ideology, a Marxist, cultural Marxist ideology, that is not right, that is not good, and it's against you, and we're seeing two-tier policing, we're seeing two-tier justice, two-tier politics, and the people of Britain have had enough of it.
The outrage has exploded as Nigel Farage, Parliament, and even John Cleese expose how religious exemptions shield violence while native citizens face the consequences.
But no matter the pain we feel, there is no justification for more violence and disorder.
Yeah.
The attacks directed towards police officers in Southampton last night were disgraceful and completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
This is a time for serious work, not rage.
Yeah.
And let me be clear, we will ensure anyone found engaging in disorder meets the full force of the law, as we have done before.
Under the Criminal Justice Act 1988 and Offensive Weapons Act 2019, carrying a bladed weapon in public carries up to 4 years in prison for ordinary Brits, yet Sikhs receive a statutory religious defense for the kirpan, allowing public carry even as prosecutors admitted Digwa chose a larger 21-centimeter blade beyond his compliant neck kirpan. France, Denmark, Sweden, Italy, and the UAE have banned public kirpan carry outright with Sikh compliance. But UK authorities cling to the exemption, effectively arming one group while disarming the native people with no way to defend themselves. Further east, Japan, long a holdout against this chaos through post-war restrictions and the 1952 Immigration Control Act, now faces its own opening salvo. 10 ancient temples and shrines, including one from 807 AD and a World Heritage Site, have been torched in the first 5 months of 2026 alone, despite automation over cheap labor and strong public opposition to large-scale immigration. Japan's quiet visa expansions and cultural arson signal the same globalist pressure hell-bent on eroding identity. Britain surrendered to the script and got two-tier chaos. Japan resisted and still watches its soul set ablaze. Proof that dilution of a people's history, safety, and cohesion is not progress. It's engineered collapse. John Bowne reporting.
So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to the AlexJonesStore.com. So this is a
fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Thursday, the 4th of June, 2026. Very glad to be here with you. We've got a lot of news to get into, some major developments, and a call to action, because I think we're very, very close to the deadline. I think what we're seeing happen all over the world are all various aspects of one singular plot. I think you may know this. If you're a regular viewer of the Alex Jones Network, you may be aware we've got this little idea about a global corporate combine trying to take over the planet and enslave us all. And I think we're seeing the various aspects of this all put into place. And it's kind of terrifying because so many people are so blind to this. And it's the type of thing that's so big, so overwhelming, so comprehensive that I don't even know how to explain it. It's like either this is actually what it's all about. This is actually why all these things are happening. We really are watching as the walls of the prison are being built around us. Or I'm insane, or I'm an insane person. But it's the type of thing where it's like, all right, all this stuff is happening. It certainly seems like it's all pushing in the same direction. It certainly seems like it's all being set up for a certain purpose. And yet nobody seems to recognize it. Nobody else seems to see it. And I don't know. I feel a little bit like Chicken Little. I feel a little bit like the sky is falling. Only it really is falling. And it's not going to be good. In other words, there's all this stuff going on. Some of it quietly. Some of it more aggressively. But it's all building to a singular major conflict, I feel. And this is what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. This is what's going on in the Middle East. But it's also what's going on here domestically, where once again, I see the way that the right wing is using the energy of the Trump administration, the Trump campaign, the Trump phenomenon, to guide us towards our own destruction and to basically use our concerns to justify building their control grid. I'm going to show you a video from a woman that lays this all out in a very powerful way. But mostly, I think the deadline, the reason I feel a certain pressure, impetus to cover all this stuff right now is, of course, Section 224 of the 2027 National Defense Authorization Act. Former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene says the United States of America is a sovereign nation. Section 224 of the 2027 National Defense Authorization Act must be removed. Our military should not be integrated in any capacity with a foreign country's military, nor should we be funding it. She, of course, is talking about this aspect of the NDAA, which is sort of one of these must-pass bills, right? Because it's the funding for the military. It's going to pass, and so they're trying to get it passed with this addendum. And Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wrote a letter to the House of Representatives where he takes credit, calling it his plan, calling it, quote, my plan. I was glad to receive your proposed congressional resolution endorsing my plan to shift the framework for U.S.-Israel defense cooperation from aid to partnership. As I said in our meeting in Jerusalem on May 27, 2026, Israel deeply appreciates the financial component of the military aid the United States has generously provided over the years. The time has now arrived for us to move from aid recipient to partner. I'm heartened by your enthusiastic support for our plan to develop a new memorandum of understanding with the United States government that will draw down U.S. financial military assistance over the next decade and replace it with what you refer to as, quote, a new framework of joint defense cooperation, co-development, co-production, and mutual investments in areas including advanced missile defense, artificial intelligence, unmanned systems, cybersecurity, and the next generation military platforms. I also appreciate your commitment to fighting the scourge of anti-Semitism in the United States and around the world. You know, this letter alone, I think, makes its own argument as to why we shouldn't do this. In this letter, he acknowledges the, quote, generously provided financial aid from the United States over the years. But there's no attempt to repay it. There's no display of gratitude beyond the, you know, performative, perfunctory statement of gratitude. But there's no give. There's no return. There's no mutual benefit. It's, hey, thanks for all that stuff you've given us all over the years. I think we're ready to be, fully partnered in now. And it's just like, you know, yeah, thanks for all that stuff that you did for us. Yeah, that was great or whatever. But we like actually want to be in charge now. There's a certain level of ingratitude expressed by the Israelis that represents the reality of the situation in that they don't care about us. They don't like us. They aren't working for our benefit. They're exploiting us for their benefit. They are now trying and succeeding in, by the way, and by the way, this would only codify and make official what is already happening through the corporate invasion of our military and domestic surveillance. Palantir is an Israeli company. It might not be headquartered. Maybe it is headquartered in Israel. I'm not even sure. I'm pretty sure it's headquartered in San Francisco. But its leadership are diehard Jewish supremacist Israelis. That's who they work for. That's who they care about. That's who they're deploying their services to serve. They don't care about America. They don't give a damn about American problems, and they're only going to make them worse. They think about Americans in the same way they think about Gazans. When are we going to understand this fully? And how unbelievably stupid would we be to hand over control of our military to them? Because in effect, that is what would happen with this partnership, quote unquote partnership, this agreement. These are people who, and maybe we just need to play the Eighth Front War today. Maybe we need to play it again so you can hear them in their own words express how they view the current conflict in the world, where they say we have to win the next war against Rome and America is the new Rome, and that we need the genius that brought Apollo pagers to Hezbollah to be enacted in this war against America. You know, the Eighth Front War documentary, I originally... its title is The Eighth Front, Israel's War on Reality. It was originally going to be Israel's War on America, because that's actually what is being expressed there. Of course, the war they're waging in America is an information war, so it is a war on reality. It's a war on truth. But really, at the end of the day, it's a war on America. The lies, the deception, the manipulation, it's in service of exploiting America to the maximum degree. I don't know why it's so hard for people to understand that this really is what's motivating them, that America being weaker because of our partnership with them is not a negative to them. It's on purpose. It's a part of it. Like, the question is, why would Benjamin Netanyahu write this letter? Why would he take credit for this? You think he doesn't know that the American people do not want their military integrated with Israel's? You think he doesn't know that the vast majority of Americans now see Israel as a genocidal apartheid state that should be wiped off the earth? Why would he take credit for this? Why would he write a letter claiming that this was his idea the whole time? Does he think it's a good idea? And people are going to be like, wow, Benjamin Netanyahu, another great idea from him. Like, he knows what he's doing. They know what they're doing. This I see as the fulfillment of the occult requirement to inform your victims of what you're doing before you do it to morally offload the karmic backlash you would otherwise get. That they're stating in no uncertain words that they're taking over the United States military, and if we let them, we deserve it. Now, this is Benjamin Netanyahu's idea. And they're not thankful for what we've given them before. It's only whetted their appetite. The iPhones are now being built in Israel, the chipset, meaning that Israel will have root access at the physical hardware level to basically the most popular phone used in America, used by everybody. They obviously are the heart and soul of Palantir, which has already been incorporated into our entire federal system, where they are monitoring our entire federal government, every single person. They're also being integrated in with ICE. ICE, which is using the outrage that right-wingers feel about illegal immigrants to accrue to themselves all sorts of extraordinary powers, build all sorts of extraordinary infrastructure, and yet they're not doing mass deportations. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Oh, if you want us to do mass deportations, you got to, you know, incorporate Palantir into our surveillance system. You got to, you know, build concentration camps all around the country. You know, if you really want us to do these deportations, you've got to allow us to, you know, be trained by the IDF and wear ski masks and not provide a warrant to search. You know, if you want us to do mass deportations, this is what it's going to take. We say, okay, you've got the green light. You've got everything that you need, and then they don't do mass deportations. What does that tell you? That that's not what it's for? So it must be for something else. What else could it be for? What else do you think it could possibly be used for, having this massive, unaccountable domestic police force with quick reaction forces staged in every single state, with room in every single state, prisons, concentration camps to house 10 to 20,000 people per camp, and at least two of them per state? They're not using them to deport people. They're not filling these locations up with illegal migrants, but they're building them. And we're at the most 2 years and a couple months away from a potential radical Democrat office holder. And all of this is being built up, is being in, whether it's, you know, it's the ICE facilities being built, it's the precedent being set of denaturalizing people or expelling people from this country because of their anti-Semitism. It's the anti-Semitism laws being passed at the state level, slowly but surely chipping away at the First Amendment. What do you think all of this is for? Why are they behaving in such an egregious way? They get us into the war in Iran. They bomb Lebanon every time we're close to a peace deal. Horrifically, again, just abject, blatant genocide against an innocent population. They're like torturing prisoners to death, raping them, you know, at an industrial scale, and it's becoming known and nobody does anything about it. They don't pay any price. They don't suffer any consequence. So I have to wonder if it's not being released on purpose. Because again, this is the danger of exposure without punishment. This is like why it's a problem with that Jeffrey Epstein files were released and nobody was arrested over it. Hell, even the UK, people lost their jobs. And there were investigations, you know, France at least like raided the Rothschild office as a consequence of the Epstein files. Nothing happened to the people here in America. So previously, where we could have, you know, speculated about the crimes people committed, even though they're walking around free, Now they come out and tell us, oh, you're right, we have committed these crimes. We are involved in this treasonous activity. And guess what? Still nothing is happening. What do you think that does? It normalizes the idea that they can get away with anything. It induces in the population a learned helplessness that says it doesn't even matter if we expose them for their crimes because they don't pay for them anyway, so why should we even bother exposing them? Why, when we essentially lost the Iran war a week into it, are we persisting in trying to keep this conflict going now 3 months in, like 100 days into this war, when it was lost in the first two or three? And we knew it was lost. Again, this is the value of having a place like the Alex Jones Network on air, because we can sit here and go, we looked at the numbers, we looked at the strategy. This does not get any better from here on out. And I said on probably the fifth day of the war, I said, this is the point where we could turn around, say, never mind, forget this, and actually not suffer that many consequences. Well, why are we persisting in it? Why, if Ukraine lost the Ukraine war in 2023, essentially, are they persisting to a really radical degree where now there's videos of Ukraine soldiers who'd already been to the front line, lost limbs in the front line. You now have amputees being dragged off the street, remobilized, sent back to the front lines to fight more because they're systematically eliminating the population of Ukraine. Russia is bombing Kiev for the first time in the entire war. They are clearly and keep sending very unsubtle signals. I mean, they aren't even signals. They're just coming out and saying, they're like, we will use nuclear weapons. We have a nuclear arsenal. We do not have to put up with this. We don't have to put up with Ukraine bombing civilian apartment buildings in Moscow or blowing up buses in Russia. We can put an end to this by using nuclear weapons, and we can take on all of Europe and not even really sweat it, but we don't want to. Why are you pushing us? And yet they keep pushing. The Ukraine war, which was lost 3 years ago, it's been 3 years of relentless but pointless murder, endlessly, with no end in sight, and really with every action, every single day, ramping up, elevating, and making more dangerous the entire situation in Europe. So again, if you know all of this, if you are looking around and you're especially seeing the intensity with which the anti-Semitism push is being made, you know, if you look at Australia, again, it's the best example where you have years of the Jewish community pressuring Australia relentlessly, just constantly. You limit free speech. You've got to shut down, you know, people who are anti-Israel. Presenting action plans, right? We've shown the video, the J7 woman who's like, yeah, we represent the biggest Jewish diasporas, and we've been pressuring the Australian government for years, you know, to do this, presenting them with plans and, you know, really pressuring them. And if there's one thing Jewish organizations are good at, it's putting pressure on people. But nothing happens until Bondi Beach, till the Bondi Beach massacre. Now, whether that was a legitimate massacre or not, I'll leave you to look into. Regardless, lo and behold, all of the sudden, the one thing they needed to get all of these laws passed happens. And so all of these laws pass. And so now you have, you know, people being thrown into prison in Australia, literally for just opposing Israel. And that's actually on the books. That's what people are being thrown into prison for. And you can extrapolate that. You can expand that out, right? That's the beauty of anti-Semitism, is even if you are just saying back to them what they say to you, that can be anti-Semitism, right? Just yesterday, there was some Jewish organization that was like, Pride is Jewish. Jewish people started Pride. Jewish people were the forces behind normalizing homosexuality. They say that. It's wonderful. It's good. It's beautiful. It's the light of the world. It's tikkun olam. But I say, hey, you know all this gay crap, you know why your kid is being taught by his teacher to chop his willy off, you know, that all started with the Jews, right? Well, that's anti-Semitism. It doesn't matter. I can just point out to something that a Jewish person is doing literally in the definition. It says, you know, talking about any of this stuff, any crimes committed by Jewish people or groups, real or imagined, it doesn't matter. It's just you can't talk about them. You can't criticize them. You can't be negative about them. You can't even repeat their own words back to them in a different voice, right? At the same time, they're passing even more strict weapon restrictions laws, destroying gun ownership for the average Australian. But they do have a carve out. They do have a little asterisk. There are certain groups, private militia groups in Australia, that are allowed to be armed. They're the Jewish groups. Henry Novak is brutally murdered, and Keir Starmer gives video, you know, makes video after video, speech after speech, basically saying, shut up, there's nothing we can do about this. Any attempt to change anything to deal with the consequences or the cause of this murder, you're evil, you're bad. Two Jewish guys get stabbed. It's millions of dollars to the Jewish community. I swear on my mother's grave, I will do everything in my power to guarantee that you are safe and that you know you're belonged. And it's just an outpouring. And they, of course, have their, you know, Shamrim or whatever they call it, private police force. They're allowed to carry weapons. They're allowed to do things that other people aren't allowed to do. So the question is, if you see all of this happening, am I the crazy one for feeling like I'm watching the Death Star be built? That's how it feels. It feels like once this stuff is all in place, once it's all operational, how are you going to resist it? How are you going to speak out against it? How are you going to gather enough people together to have a protest against this, especially when everybody learns? You know, you only need to do it to a few people. A few people need to suffer the consequences, the doctrine of severity, and everybody else will learn to keep their damn mouths shut. I see a digital panopticon being built from the data centers to the ICE facilities, to the integration of Palantir, to the digital IDs, to the control of AI and the censorship of social media. These are all the components of a Death Star. You don't build a Death Star for no reason. You build a Death Star to blow up planets. You don't put all of these things in place to make little animated memes, right? You don't build these data centers out with this ruthless aggression, destroying entire communities, robbing people's homes, spending all the money you get from the government. So now you're having to dip into savings accounts and retirement accounts that you manage because you're so desperate to get this done right now, and it's worth it at any cost. The only thing that makes sense to me is that they really feel like they're about to shut that prison door. They're about to turn that lock, and they're about to completely destroy any exit that we have from the system that they're building. And I feel like if this bill passes, because this is the way it works, right? With other stuff that the Israelis don't want, you know, a law passes, but does it really pass? Does it really matter? Is it really enforced? Who's going to enforce it? Nobody. All right, well, then DEI still exists on college campuses. You can pass a law about DEI. It doesn't really matter. But when it's Israel, and when it's something like the military, if this passes, that's it. It goes into the assembly line, and it moves forward. And they combine, the Israeli and the American military. And once that happens, it will be impossible to extricate them ever again. And we're going to be permanently tied to this genocidal little psychotic state that is destroying us.
Plug for about 90 seconds at the end of the first hour. Didn't plug any last hour. And I raised that point. I'd say, aren't I good? I didn't plug. It's bad I didn't plug. But I didn't interrupt that guest. That's how we fund this operation. If I just plugged twice an hour, we've done the math, we'd have plenty of funds around this place. And I can then hire more crew, more stuff. But I don't do it, so we're almost in the red again. So be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny. And the products really work because we want to sell you something that is going to be great, that's good for you, that blows you away. So you go, man, that Alex Jones was right again. Not just about what he covers and says, but the products. RT3 iodine is not instant gratification. It takes about 2 weeks on average for it to kick in. It is the missing link. Most people are iodine deficient. The iodine that's in the environment, most of it's bound, meaning it's not atomic. It's not pure on the periodic table. It is bound to a whole bunch of other stuff, and you don't absorb it properly. This is atomic iodine. It does everything. Now, again, you die without oxygen in 4 minutes. Everybody knows this. 4 minutes without oxygen, the average person's dead. Some people quicker. Without water, you die in about 4 days. Out in the desert today, most people die in about 45 days without food. Now, why is that? Because the food has the vitamins and minerals in it. And I know I'm talking to you like you're 5 years old. I know most of you get this, but for others that don't, iodine, you can look it up, is one of the essential elements that without iodine, you die. Now, in the 1920s, they noticed about a 15-20 point IQ reduction, particularly in the Midwest, and massive spikes nationwide of child deformities, birth defects. And they did a bunch of big government studies and found that people that lived on coastal cities and that ate a lot of fish had higher IQs and basically almost no deformities. And they went, oh, it's the iodine. So they started putting a cheap form that's bound, but you still get some of it, but sodium fluoride, I think it's the one, in the salts. When I was a kid, it still said Morton salts, iodine added. You know, the little girl with the umbrella, and it says when it rains, it pours. This is the super version of that. Just a few drops a day. It takes 2 weeks on average to kick in for the average person. And your skin, your stamina, your libido. I remember, like, gosh, time flies, like 18 years ago or something, I met Dr. Edward Grubb, really smart guy, total visionary. And he said, listen, you need to start taking atomic iodine. And he'd come out with the only one. And he said, you should sell this private label. And I said, okay. He said, you know, you got some of those sunspots on your face. And I was like 38 then or so. And I'd have bad skin, but I did have some sunspots, brown spots and stuff that weren't freckles. You know, I call them liver spots. And he said, all this other stuff will happen, your libido, everything. He goes, it's about 2 weeks for it to kick in. And right at about the two-week mark of the average person, you'll kind of feel crappy for a day or two. It's not like you have a cold or the flu, but you feel kind of groggy and tired. That's when it shifts in the cells, the mitochondria. And then a lot of toxins will get pushed out. You might even break out or something. But he said, after that, you'll feel incredible. 2 weeks later, I go, man, I feel like crap today. I have no energy. Lasts about a day. And then when I woke up the next day after feeling sick the day before, it was like I'd been carrying, you know, one of my kids on my shoulders. I'd carry them until they were like 5 or 6. Sometimes it'd be exhausting, but you take them off your shoulders, it feels so good. That's what it felt like. You're insane if you don't get this, and it funds our operation. And I only sell stuff that works, but it's not instant gratification. 2 weeks. Now be careful with it. Talk to your physician before, because if you've got some different thyroid issues, it can cause problems. In most cases, it helps, but you talk to your physicians. This isn't a game. And so a small percentage of people that can do some weird stuff. So be careful. This isn't, I'm not selling placebo here. I only sell stuff that kick you like a mule in a good way. Be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny.
Folks, welcome back. Let me lay out some background so you can understand the warning I'm trying to get across here. Let me go to clip number 22 now. I think one of the biggest aspects of the global control grid that's moving forward relentlessly and regardless of how people feel about it, is things like digital ID. They're doing it through government where they can, in places like the UK. But short of that, they'll just get the companies to do it for them. They'll get the websites or the service providers themselves to check your age, which is, of course, scanning your face and logging it in a facial recognition database. The point is to tie you biometrically to your digital clone, so they can track absolutely everything that you ever do, anything that you ever purchase, just absolutely everything about you in an effort to control you. But that's where humans are involved. They're doing this to literally everything. This is why they're building the data centers. They are tokenizing the world, and they're using AI and mass surveillance to create a digital copy of the world that they can manipulate at their whim. Let's go to clip 22 here.
Right now, we have Congress negotiating the Clarity Act. And the Clarity Act describes digital tokens. And what we know is that Wall Street and the banking system want to use digital tokens to trade all the other assets, both real assets like your house or your stocks and bonds, your financial assets. And what they've said is they want to move all the stocks and bonds in the world onto a distributive ledger, which gives them then the ability to make it programmable.
I see.
Okay. And the Bank of International Settlements, which has been running the process on central bank digital currency, has announced it's making an inventory of all the assets in the world. So the desk over here is in the BIS inventory, so all assets in the world. And they want to be able to trade all assets with a digital token. I heard one of the creepiest things I've ever heard was a software developer bragging about how cool this was, because you could go to the grocery store and pay for your groceries with 0.01% of your house equity.
Wow.
I know. I said, wow. Right. So here's what's very confusing. If you look at the debate about the Clarity Act, it's still not clear to me exactly how they're proposing this system is going to work. And if you read all the different sort of things that can be found on what they're proposing, I think it's still very fluid. Okay. So you just need to remember now, DTC is basically the archive of who owns what stock and bonds. And it runs that process for $114 trillion of stocks and bonds. DTC has just announced, even though the Clarity Act hasn't finalized yet, that they are planning on moving everything. They're launching their distributed ledger system to trade everything with tokens, along with 50 major financial institutions. So this is moving very, very quickly. And Washington right now is in deep debate about the details of how this is going to work. And I'm delighted to talk about all of that. But what is important for people listening to know is the financial system is moving quickly to institute an all-digital financial system, which is no longer going to be financial system as we know it. It's a control system. It's a technocratic control system. And what we need to know is, okay, well, what do I do? And what you do is you do everything to slow them down or stop them. Because this is a vision that if the bankers control fiscal policy, that is the end of taxation with representation. That is taxation without representation. That is the end of the Constitution.
That's a
practical
point.
Matter.
And we're already dangerously close to that. Psychopaths run the system. That's the warning from investment banker Catherine Austin Fitz, the former Wall Street insider, says most people can't imagine a world where powerful institutions would seek greater surveillance, control, and influence over everyday life. Why? Because healthy people assume everyone shares the same values. Spoiler, they don't. Again, if you study all of this stuff, you recognize how all of these things seem to be playing into the same process, right? What is the consequence of inflation ticking up year over year? Well, for wealthy people whose wealth is almost entirely in property, that means their wealth is going up, right? They don't worry about the cash in their bank account. That represents like less than 1% of their actual wealth. You look at somebody like Elon Musk, he's worth $1 trillion. I don't even know how many dollars he has actually in dollars. It's all stocks and ownership of various companies and, using certain property as collateral to get bank loans. I mean, it's all sort of woo-woo stuff, but when the value of the money goes down, it means the value of the property goes up correspondingly. So rich people whose wealth is entirely tied up in properties and companies and valuations, their wealth goes up. The average person ends up just spending more of their money, dwindling the supply. So as they continue to print money to fund the wars that Israel wanted, to drive Americans into bankruptcy, lowering and devaluing the amount our dollars are worth, while correspondingly rising the stock portfolios of the billionaires. It's a squeeze. It's not like an outright robbery, but that's what all of these things are. It's like, let's just turn this up a little bit, you know, turn inflation up just a little bit, just make it so that people can't save quite as much money as they were before. They got to dip into their savings, pay $7 instead of $5 for a meal every day over time. That amounts to a hell of a lot of money. And it just means that your savings or your potential savings that you could have had otherwise is just diminished. It's just lowered just a little bit. And then they'll implement like death taxes. So the older generations that were actually able to save and maybe even inherited and grew generational wealth, that'll be stripped from them, be stripped from you. You know, the inheritance will go away. And maybe to get around that, people start spending their money more before they die. And essentially what you're left with is you follow all these different trends, all these different pressures, all these different incentives, is that we're headed inextricably, unwaveringly towards a world in which people just don't have money. You are literally operating on sort of a paradigm of the company store where you're working for credits that you have to spend regardless of what you want to do. It'll be the rent, it'll be the food, it'll be, and basically whether they are forcing you to stop purchasing things or just make it more expensive, same type of thing. It's like you've got these ticks that are stopping people from eating meat. At the same time, you've got regulations and, you know, USDA requirements forcing the closure of all of the small meat processors. It's like they're just, it's just this constriction, this slow but sure constriction of the food supply, especially the meat supply. They want you on soy and corn, basically. They want you weak. They want you helpless. They want you spending what little money you do have just trying to, you know, have a nice meal. It's like when it was Kevin Leary or whoever, one of these scumbag oligarchs is talking about, you know, Americans being poor because they're not willing to like eat a peanut butter on white bread sandwich every day for lunch. Yeah, Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary. And it's like, do you understand that in the year 2026 in America, the greatest country, most prosperous, richest country by far the world has ever known, you're telling its citizens to basically starve? like, you have to eat white bread. Well, we continue to be the most prosperous country in the history of the world, that we can lose hundreds of billions of dollars to Somalis and we somehow don't even notice for a couple years. Like, but none of our citizens benefit from that. When you see all of this stuff, all these various components all falling into place, again, it's about the control system, but it's also about the crushing of your will, the elimination of generational wealth, the elimination of intelligence and you know, higher thought that's necessary to actually provide the intellectual underpinning for a genuine revolution. They are building a permanent control grid that will use financial surveillance and any other system of control that they can get their hands on to very subtly but surely crush us to death, right? I've said this the entire time I've worked at InfoWars, and I explained this because I noticed it in 2016 with Donald Trump. The way I'd always explain it is that plan A for the globalist was like Hillary Clinton. If Hillary Clinton had got elected, they would have used the fake news psyop to start rounding up independent media. They would have claimed that Trump was a Russian agent. It would have been bad, and that would have just sort of like in a chute, like in a, you know, on a mechanized walkway. We're just on the path towards globalism and we don't even know it. We're just, you know, blind idiots following the Pied Piper towards our doom. And that was the original plan. And that's the ideal plan. The ideal for the globalist is to destroy you without you noticing, right? That's what they really want. Or even to get you to participate in your own destruction, if you happen to notice it. By voting for Trump, that was a rejection of that worldview. During the first election, especially, excuse me, the things he was saying, the positions he was holding, they were an outright, abject, blatant rejection of globalism. I mean, he would say it, nationalism, not globalism, will be our credo. And the metaphor I'd always use is it's like they're trying to capture a tiger because they're scared of humanity. The powers that be, the globalists, the world leaders live in constant fear of being exposed and basically being torn apart by the mob because they know they deserve it. And so we're the tiger to them, right? We're a very dangerous animal to them. They want us in a cage. If the tiger's in a cage, they're a lot easier to poke with a stick, right? They can't do anything about it. And so they're building this cage. They have a cage in the woods, in the forest, and they're trying to trick the tiger into going into it. And so they put, little pieces of fish in a trail leading into the cage. And essentially for a couple decades, the tiger of America was sort of following the trail and heading right in the direction of the cage. And they were sitting, they were hiding in the bushes, waiting for us to get into the cage so they could slam that door shut. And then 2016, the Trump election was sort of the tiger looking up for the first time and seeing the cage and going, well, wait a second. What the hell is this? I don't think I want to go in here. And the tiger kind of starts to back up a little bit. Now, if you're hunting a tiger, you got two choices at this point. You can go, ooh, he almost got wise to us. We better back off a little bit. Better make him feel safe for a little while. Cage? What cage? What are you talking about? If there was a cage, why would they let you elect Donald Trump? You crazy conspiracy theorists think everything's controlled. Donald Trump got elected, right? And he's making big moves. And, maybe you're wrong about all of this. Maybe you need to put your guard down a little bit. Maybe you need to relax, right? That would have been one move they could have made. They could have backed off. They could have realized, ooh, we've been found out. We better chill for a little bit to lower the defenses. They went with the other option. The other option was to reach out and grab the tiger and try to shove it forcefully into the cage. So obviously in that situation, there's no hiding it anymore. It just becomes obvious. Yep, you saw the cage. Well, too bad. We're still going to try to shove you in it. So now it's a fight. And now we're, pushing back and they're pushing forward. And it's sort of, up to us just actively and vehemently resist all of this. Resist being put in the cage because we know what happens once that cage door is shut. And so, since like 2016, there's been this vicious battle between the tiger of humanity and the, vicious hunters of the globalists trying to force us into it. But they would prefer if we had just walked right in. They'd prefer if we'd just willingly go with them. Which the easiest way to get somebody to go along with it is to either keep them from the knowledge, which is possible to a certain extent, but then once, you're implementing digital ID, once you're actually doing it to them in a way that affects their life, you got to come out with it. You got to reveal what it is that you're doing. And so you want to either portray it as a good thing and get them to go along with it, or basically make it to where it appears as though it's happening spontaneously and nobody's actually deciding. And I know it's kind of crazy to say this, but like that really is the vibe that most people operate on. That like, I don't know why, I just always say that to be a conspiracy theorist, you just got to understand things don't just happen. Like people are going to think that this is just happening. Like they're just going to get a letter from their bank one day that's like, hey, by the way, we're not doing cash anymore. So everything's digital. And, to help make this transition smoother, we're going to give you $1,000. And people are just going to go, whoa, my bank just gave me $1,000. They're like not even going to notice the digital part. They're not going to care. Like, I don't like using cash anyway. It's fine. Who cares? And they're going to treat it like the sunrise. They're going to treat it like the dew on the morning grass. They're going to treat it as a spontaneous event that just sort of occurred. And that nobody had the ability to foresee or to forestall or to say anything about. It just sort of happens. It's just, there are experts out there somewhere in the Ethereum and they're making these decisions on technocratic lines. And this is just the way it is. The world is progressing. Things are happening. Developments are occurring. And it's just, we just got to deal with it. It's like people, because they know, like intellectually, if you ask people like, how did, if your bank shifts from cash to being a cash-free digital endeavor, did that just sort of happen? Did Did a computer decide? Did God decide it? No, human beings had meetings. They said, here's what we want to do. Here's why we want to do it. It's going to be expensive to do. It's going to be hard to do. So it's got to be worth it. So what is it worth it? Why is it worth it to them to do this? Why are they making this decision? Why are they choosing this path for you? And why don't they want you to know about it? Things don't just happen. Digital ID isn't just manifesting spontaneously like a thunderstorm. It is a plot. It is a plan. There are human beings in boardrooms making decisions, implementing programs, instructing employees to design how to sell it to you. These things are on purpose. There are human beings deciding it. And the only thing that will stop them is stopping them. The only thing that will get people aware enough to stop them is to tell people about what's going on and hope to God they've got enough discernment and, I don't know, human soul left in them that they can understand why you don't want a giant cabal of psychotic billionaires to be in control of the entire world down to every blade of grass in the tree in your front yard. And by the way, you also are going to be tokenized. You are going to be assigned a value. You are going to be treated like a sack of meat in all of this when all of this is done. So again, it's just when you look at everything all at once in a comprehensive and universal way, it is a inescapable conclusion that all of this is on purpose. It's all tied in together and it's all pointing towards one ultimate outcome, which is a digital panopticon control grid for people who are trying to systematically reorganize all of human society away from tradition, away from family, away from the human individual, towards a mechanized, inhuman, dystopian ant pile world of surveillance, control, coercion. And by the way, at the heart of it, ruthless and brutal violence. Because that's what undergirds all of this. That's what ensures all of this is able to continue, is any opposition to it will be met by ruthless, monopolistic force from the people in charge. So, you know, we're still the tiger. We are still free. The cage is still not closed around us. But we can see them building the bars, and we do have to bite them. We do have to bite them in the neck. Metaphorically, symbolically. But we do still have claws, you know. We do still have teeth. They are still human beings. All of this, of course, metaphysical, politically, obviously. Let's go now to clip number 12, because this woman, I think, absolutely gets it and is approaching the situation with the appropriate approbation, anger, fury, righteous indignation, and damn near panic level extremity, because this is happening very, very soon. And I genuinely think this section 224 could very well be the death knell of our civilization, since not because it will be the stake driven into our heart, but if it passes, it's the equivalent of creating the stake, lining it up with your heart and waiting for the hammer blow to fall. Let's watch.
I'm really sick of sticking my neck on the line to sound the alarm for you guys, just for you to hop in the comments and be like, you're fear mongering, but I'm going to try this one more time and I'm never doing this again. So you better listen to me and listen to me good. We need to rip Donald Trump, his entire administration, all of AIPAC and Israel out of the United States of America, root and stem right now. We don't have another moment to waste. We don't get to go back and forth. There is no more debating. The lines have been drawn. It needs to happen right now, immediately. Everything that has happened in the past year has been leading up to this very moment, and they are in the final stages of executing their overall plan. In the coming days, Congress is going to be voting on legislation that would merge the United States military with the Israeli military. And why the fuck would they do that? Buckle your tits up, because I'm going to tell you. It's because United States servicemen are not going to commit a genocide against American women and children on American soil, but the IDF will. You guys keep thinking the war crimes in Lebanon or the genocide in Palestine are isolated events funded by your tax dollars, that's why your life is so expensive. That is a preview of what they intend on doing to you. They have already consolidated all of the power to the executive branch. Out of the 1,200 directives listed in Project 25, over 1,000 have been implemented. Everything that they've said they're going to do thus far, they have done. ICE is more funded than the Marine Corps, and they are actively deployed to a useless war that we got into with Iran on behalf of Israel, that Donald Trump said, yeah, we went to war with Iran because of Israel. Israel is calling the shots here, and you think that they want to merge the militaries for what? To take over the Middle East? They're expanding ICE detention centers at an alarming rate. They are trying to put two in every single state with a maximum holding capacity of 10,000 people, but never to exceed a stay of 60 days. Do you guys understand that they are putting incinerators in there? The Department of Justice is trying to bring back death by firing squad, and now they have new manifestos outside of Project 25, Project Esther, Project 26, which detail how they intend on eradicating the United States of America of 100 million citizens. That is one-third of the population. That means that if you do not act now and you stay here, you have a 33.333% chance of it being you and your kids in a fucking incinerator at an ICE detention center or dying by a firing squad. Donald Trump is the one who handed us the fuck over on a silver platter. I voted for him because he's a good businessman, and he treated the United States like a business, one that was going out of business, that needed to be liquidated, and he chopped that shit off, and he sold it off for all his fucking profit, and now every last member of his fucking family is plotting their fucking escape. They're moving to fucking Argentina. They're buying islands in fucking Albania. They're building billion-dollar bunkers in fucking Hawaii. All of the fucking signs are there. They're jumping ship because they got out of the United States what they fucking wanted, and now they do not care what happens to you. Larry Fink, king of fucking Zionists and owner of BlackRock, went on national fucking television. Do you know what BlackRock owns? Your fucking mortgages, your savings account, every bank you bank with, your Roth IRA, your 401k. And when they said, well, we ran out of tax dollars to spend on developing the infrastructure to maintain the AI surveillance centers, so we're going to use your savings accounts and your retirement funds to build that shit, so we have the technology and ease we need to hunt you down and put you in detention centers. Your tax dollars built the detention centers, and your retirement is building the AI surveillance software they need to hunt you the fuck down. Say I'm being dramatic, but the IDF is already here on American soil collecting a paycheck working for ICE. We have confirmation.
All right, folks, we got to go to a commercial break, but I'm going to actually pick this up on the other side. We'll let it finish in the next hour. Stay with us, folks. It's War Room, War Room Live, AlexJonesLive.com. Stay with us.
At midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to AlexJonesLive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing and hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at AlexJonesLive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. they failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds, hear the broadcast, share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com, the coordinates of freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.